This hour of the Jason Rant Show is brought to you by The Ben Shapiro Show. Heard weeknights. 6 to 9 right here on KTTH. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
So, is another lockdown coming or what? I ask that because I'm told we're waiting to see the data coming from Thanksgiving weekend. The surge within this surge. If something does happen, Jay Inslee will likely lock us down yet again. That is the fear.
If there is some kind of spike that was associated with Thanksgiving, it's probably about 10 days to 2 weeks before we would really start seeing that in our numbers.
That's State Secretary John Weissman. He says he's making no predictions on whether or not we're going to see this COVID spike after the holiday. Obviously, he's not going to take a position as to whether or not the governor is going to give us another lockdown. But he does say the case rates continue to climb. Case rates don't mean as much as you think, as much as some folks want us to think. I know that the way the media, generally speaking, covers it, and the way at least some people perceive case rates, it automatically means more hospitalizations and more deaths. That's not what case rates means. You can have a 100% increase in cases of COVID and not a single person go to the hospital. Now, obviously, that's not always the case. And obviously, depending on where you live and the situation in the hospitals, whether or not the hospitalization rate matters is questionable. If you're in an area where the hospitalization utilization is low, meaning there's not a lot of people right now in the hospital, you can obviously withstand a surge in which you're seeing some cases needing to be in a hospital. The opposite is also true. If you're in an area where the hospitals are overrun, obviously there is concern. People are pretending the way that they're talking about this is that hospitals all across the country in every region exactly the same. All overrun. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. That's just not the case. And we should be glad that's not the case. The way that it's being discussed is a little bit disingenuous. The tone, the rhetoric doesn't match some of the data. And I've made this point before. It's worth repeating. And I think all of us should constantly say this out loud. The death rate, that's a conservative death rate, here in Washington State, is 1.8%. 1.8%. Let us not treat the death rate as if it's the survival rate. Even the people who are most vulnerable, the ones who have the comorbidities, the ones who are older, dealing with an underlying health condition, even for that group, the death rate isn't the 98.2% that some people treat it as. It doesn't mean it's not serious. It doesn't mean we don't take it seriously. It doesn't mean we do nothing, but it should impact how we talk about this and our mitigation policies. Now, as far as whether or not we're going to get another closure, another lockdown, based on what happens over the next couple weeks as we get this data coming in from the Thanksgiving holiday, Inslee at least seems cautiously optimistic. I guess.
We appear to be the number one state in the United States to act safely during Thanksgiving. But, you know, we know it wasn't 100%. So to that extent, we are concerned.
So if you don't get 100% of the population following your mandates, it's of concern? Really? Do you expect 100%? Because you're not going to get it. And if you were to, God forbid, try to put us in another lockdown, people are not going to accept it. And that includes folks on the left. It's not a threat. It's not encouragement from my part. It's reality. Right now, with the exception of most restaurants, the businesses that are supposed to be cutting down to 25% occupancy, which is retail, they're not. Most of them are not doing it. Grocery stores. Has anything changed in grocery stores with the exception of Trader Joe's, which for the most part hasn't stopped doing like the counting at the front? Has any grocery store changed?
No, nothing's changed.
I live in Seattle. You're in Newcastle. You hang out sometimes in Auburn. How is it that we've not experienced any different whatsoever? Now, maybe you guys have, and you can certainly text us at 1-800-465-8770. Have any of your grocery stores cut down to 25% occupancy? I know gyms that are closed, in air quotes. And by closed, I mean they pulled blinds down on their window fronts or put newspaper up, but the lights are on and people are still coming in and out. They're open. I know barbershops that haven't changed anything and are not down to 25%. I know lots of retail that have chosen not to change anything. And guess what? They're not changing anything because you guys in the Inslee administration, and I know you listen, you misled them about what to do. You told them you're going to be driven by science and data, except apparently when you don't like what the science and data tells you. You told them to do these mitigation efforts. Separate out your workstations at the nail salon. Make sure you're cleaning everything down often at the restaurant. Wear masks. And make sure all of your customers wear masks. Get those sneeze guards. Put them up as partitions in between people. You all said that. You told us if we had a robust system in place for contact tracing, we'd all be good. We'd be good to go. That's how we reopen our economy. They did that. They spent money on it. You didn't spend money on it. They spent money on it. During a down economy, they put the money into all of that, only for you to just change your mind. All while, by the way, telling us this entire time, all the mitigation efforts work. He's still bragging on Twitter, Jay Inslee, about, you know what we know works? Masks, social distancing, we know it works. It's working really, really well. Why'd you just shut down the economy again? Why is it that, despite most people in Washington State doing everything you asked, why are we going through another surge? Weird. Oh, but good news for the businesses out there. Finally, applications for the state's next round of small business grants now available.
The Department of Commerce is on track to open applications early this week for the $50 million in new Working Washington grants.
Wow, that's awesome. We'll all have a role to play by spreading the word of a URL no one's going to remember once he says it.
If you know of a small business that has been heavily impacted by COVID.
All of them. All of them. Name a small business that hasn't been impacted by COVID. They're all impacted. Which, by the way, is a good reminder. If you hear an ad on this station and you are already going to go with a service or a product, understand that if they've got an ad up right now, they are operating. Please support these local businesses that support this station, that allows us to do what it is we do. Lots of people are struggling.
A restaurant, your favorite music venue,
all
your
of them.
Local bowling
all
alley.
Of them. Please. Music venues haven't been open this entire time. Have you lived here?
Tell them to visit commerce.wa.gov/bizgrants.
Yeah, they'll remember that. What's the website? What's the website?
Commerce.com/bizgrants.
No, you got it wrong.
What was it?
Commerce. Dot grants.
Was it dot gov?
Dot wa.
Dot wa dot gov forward slash biz grants.
Biz dot wa dot commerce.
Is that biz
dot,
with an S or a Z?
Everything cool that's helpful is with a Z.
Okay, rants.
Yeah. Governor set aside $50 million for this round. That won't actually help the way that he wants you to believe it will. But I guess it's something. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, policing may change in Washington State thanks to Democrats in Olympia. We're going to tell you what they plan to do in this next legislative session. Don't forget, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRants. I'll have video up shortly from my Fox Business hit today. And don't forget, I'll be on Fox and Friends tomorrow at a god-awfully early time.
How early?
Oh, my God. It's early even on the East Coast, but that's when everyone's awake.
So how early?
Like our time?
Yeah.
3:50.
Oh, I'll be up.
Yeah, which means I got to get up at 3 o'clock.
I'll be playing Xbox.
Oh, my gosh. So I don't expect you to watch that, guys. I don't expect it live, at least. But I'll have it up at twitter.com/JasonRants or facebook.com/JasonRants show. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Back the blue.
So Democrats in Olympia are planning an overhaul or a reimagining of policing in Washington state. They're going to do this once the legislative session starts in January. The focus, of course, should be on the economy, saving us from what Jay Inslee did over the COVID pandemic. But they're going to focus on more. They're going to focus on policing. And this is the consequence of losing this last election and not putting in office more Republicans. This is what we get. This is what happens. Democrats pushed by Seattle progressives, who in turn are pushed by anti-cop activists, they're going to be making some significant changes, although they're going to pretend it's not that big of a deal.
I believe you will see significant legislation pass with support from all sides.
Significant, but everyone's going to love it. Both sides will support it. That's a chair of the House Public Safety Committee. It's Democrat Roger Goodman. He spoke to Cairo 7 TV. And the way he makes the reforms sound is that all of this is common sense. Unless you put some thought into it and you realize what it is they're really doing.
Deadly force should be used less often than it is today. And the less than lethal use of means of force should be a priority.
That sounds fine until you realize that's just a bumper sticker statement. It's meaningless. It's a talking point that doesn't mean anything. Of course, you need context. Deadly force should be used when people's lives are on the line, be it an officer's life or someone who's a member of the public. If you are a threat to an officer or someone who's a passerby, deadly force is appropriate. An officer cannot be held responsible for whether or not you are going to be a threat to the public. You can be. You and I can be. It's actually kind of easy to not be a threat to an officer or a member of the public. It's actually really easy. For example, and I've got plenty, I won't go through all of them, but here's one. And I think this is actually something that's doable and pragmatic. This is take-home advice. Don't try to shoot a police officer.
Should I write that down?
You should. Don't try to pull a gun on an officer. Like, for example, Che Taylor did in Seattle, which is why cops shot him. He reached for a gun. Don't lure cops into your home under the false pretense of a robbery. And then when cops are there asking you about it, don't pull a kitchen knife on them and try to stab them, which is what Charlene Lyles did. Those are two takeaways that I think all of us can at least agree on. You do that, you are at risk of getting shot. You are at risk of deadly force being used against you. So simply saying, we gotta have less deadly force, that's not up to the cop. Now, Goodman and other Democrats want to pretend that cops are in control here. That's what they want you to believe. Because after all, you've heard the names of some victims of police brutality. Or at least what they want you to believe is cases of police brutality, like the two names I just gave you, which of course are not. There's going to be a push to have officers be required to try to de-escalate confrontations before deadly force is used. I don't know what that means. I mean, I know what it means. I don't know what it means in the context of what they realistically want a police officer to do. How much time do they have to de-escalate? How much time should they attempt to de-escalate? Let's say, for example, You're an officer who gets called, let's just throw out a random date, May 19th, 2020, to a call of a man who is trying to stab people with a knife, a kitchen knife, in Seattle, in Queen Anne. You get that call, you go down there. The man, while trying to stab others, then turns his attention to you, lunges at you, swings his knife at you. What should you do to, quote-unquote, de-escalate before using deadly force? What's the timing at that point? Because they used a stun gun that didn't work, and then they shot him. They also, by the way, had a canine unit. Didn't do enough. Should they have de-escalated up until after a cop was stabbed to death? What exactly is the timeline would you prefer those officers to unrealistically follow as you legislate policing in Olympia? There's going to be a push to restrict the use of chokeholds, another position that doesn't make sense. Oh, but Jason, did you know that one time, or that two times, or even the three times where a chokehold was used, it ended up being abused? I do know that. You know what I don't know? The thousands and thousands and thousands of other times in which it wasn't abused. We focus on the small instances in which something is abused. And in some cases, yeah, they have been abused. Good news, we have laws on the books that can address that. And if you live in a state in which that law does not exist, hey, that's a reform I can get behind. I'd like to see the law. But that's obviously something that I think reasonable people can get behind. You don't just go ahead and ban everything because someone did something wrong in one, two, three, four, or a handful of cases. We can acknowledge that something was wrong, the person needs to be punished, without taking away that tool. Because when that tool is used to save someone's life or their own life, I think it's okay to use. They're going to try to restrict the use of police dogs, mandating that they not be let off their leash. Okay. Let's just get rid of the dog. What do we need the dogs for? I mean, I thought we had the dogs to help protect human life, but I guess that's not of value anymore. Certainly not the human lives of the cops. I hope you guys are well aware of what the Democrats are trying to do here and what they will do here. And it's not so much that you're going to be able to change the minds of the activists who are behind this. You're not. The hardcore Seattle-style progressives, whether they live in Seattle or not, they're going to do this. You need to step up and put the pressure on the more moderate Democrats, the more sane Democrats, the ones who live in areas that they're lucky to have been elected, like Jared Mead, Steve Hobbs, Mark Mullett. You need to be focusing on them. And when the time comes, as we do every year during the legislative session, we're going to be asking you to make phone calls and send emails and make sure that they know that you know how they're voting on these very important life or death issues. 1-800-465-8770. Speaking of life or death, a woman in DuPont just celebrated her 108th birthday. That's pretty awesome. I'm going to celebrate with her when we come back. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. Senator Mark Schessler is going to stop by in just a moment. He has decided to step down from his role as the Senate Minority Leader. He's doing that so he can spend more time with his grandkids. But is there something more behind this move? Is there another reason? And what really does this mean for the Washington State Republican Party and the Republicans in the Senate? He's going to stop by, and we're going to talk about it in about 15 minutes. But before that, let's talk about a rather adorable puff piece on Pat Cooper. Pat Cooper lives in DuPont. Pat Cooper just turned 108 years old. She's lived through two pandemics, says King Five, not realizing this pandemic isn't over, and maybe, knock on wood, we shouldn't throw those vibes out there just yet. As a result of living through two pandemics, 108 years old, as a result of this King Five piece, the government now knows she's out there, and now they kidnapped her and they're doing secret experiments on her that I were able to find out because they're wondering maybe she's a mutant. I'm kidding. She's fine. You know how she celebrated? What's her name?
Miss Mary.
What do you mean, Miss Mary?
That's what they call her in the story.
Who's Pat Cooper?
The activities director for assisted living home.
What's Mary's last name?
I don't know if they ever say it. They just refer to her as Miss Mary.
Maybe her first name is Miss.
Maybe it is. Maybe Mary's her last name. Miss Mary?
Mrs. Mary. They don't tell you her husband is 112. I made that up. She celebrated by going on her balcony, and people in the home that she lives, Patriots Landing, they were outside as she was standing on the balcony, and they were singing happy birthday to her. And droplets of COVID was being spread all over the place. Didn't reach her because she was pretty high up, or so we hope.
Do you think she could hear it?
She didn't know what was going on, because the one thing I noticed in this King Five piece, they don't talk to her.
Nope, not at all.
She doesn't really talk. Patty does. She's the activities director. She's happy that Miss Mary was able to celebrate this year.
That's a huge thing for her, to be able to come out on that porch and celebrate with us.
Is it huge because she doesn't normally move?
She's like the old grandparents in Willy Wonka who don't leave the bed for 40 years.
Is that what she means there? Or was it a huge thing for her to see all these people who show her love? Because my reaction to the story is dependent on that. You know, when we do these stories about the 108-year-olds or the 112-year-olds or whatever it is, it's usually a celebration of life, right? It's like, wow, look how old this person is, and they're still going strong. Telling us that it's not a miserable life to be that old. Because we all reasonably think that I would think, 108 years old, you're going to be miserable. That comment kind of made me sound like, I'm 38 and I'm miserable. That comment makes it seem like almost she's not being as happy as she could be. She was born in 1912. She lived through both world wars, the Great Depression, 20 presidencies. She lived through Prohibition, although she might have been drinking some vodka made in the bathtub. She lived through the Dust Bowl. That first pandemic that she lived through, the Spanish flu, she was 6 years old. Now she's witnessing the second one. Joshua Morley with the DuPont Police Department put it in perspective.
It's just amazing. You know, she got to see cars come about, you know, airplanes, and I mean, the internet. It's amazing.
What if she's a vampire?
The officer's translation right there was, she is old.
So old.
It was the nicest way he could have put it.
The way he just put it is the way young people jokingly talk to their grandparents when they're all like, what was it like before electricity?
What was it like before
running water?
iPhone 6S.
That's a very millennial, I suppose. So when you encounter someone, like, what are you supposed to say to someone who's 108 years old? And I mean that totally seriously, because do you say on their birthday, we wish you many more? Because that almost seems condescending, right? But you can't do the opposite. You can't be all like, it's probably the last one.
Hope it's your last.
It's going to be the last. I'm going to be honest. Probably not going to do this. So please, you know, drink this all in. Like, what do you say to someone in that position?
I think you congratulate them, but I don't know.
But like, that also seems almost belittling. Like, congratulations. No one thought you could make it this long. Patty from the nursing home or the elder care home or whatever this place is, says Mary is the queen of the retirement home.
Mary is amazing. She's been here 10 years. So many of our residents respect her. She is almost like the queen of Patriots Landing.
Is it respect or is it fear?
Are you still on the vampire thing?
Is it fear, not necessarily tied to the vampire stuff, but she's been around. She probably rules with an iron fist.
She's got dirt on everyone living there?
No, she likes things her way. And if you're just a little bit too loud as you're playing bingo in the conference hall, you're just a little bit too loud at the dinner table at 3:45 in the afternoon, maybe she doesn't like it, and she gets in your face, or she gives you that stare. She gives you that look. But of course, when we talk about stories of people who have lived this long, we always have to ask the silly, useless question about, do you have any advice for people to live that long? As if anyone wants to live to 108 years old. But again, King Five suspiciously didn't actually talk to this woman. So it's possible she doesn't actually exist. And the one moment we saw her on the thing is CGI, maybe. Patty gives us the golden rule to living to 108 years old, and we're pretending that Patty is not lying to us.
When I asked her what the secret to longevity is, and she said, always wake up happy. And as simple as that, always wake up happy. And I'll never forget that she said that, and I try to do that. So words of wisdom.
If that's the secret to living well into your hundreds, I'm legitimately living on borrowed time. I should have been dead maybe a decade and a half ago. I'm certainly not going to be able to wake up at 3 a.m. to do my Fox and Friends hit.
You're not going to wake up happy?
At 3 a.m., no. I will definitely not be waking up happy.
Just try it and let me know how it goes.
Oh, I've done it many times. Never been happy. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text message. We're kidding. Happy birthday to Miss Mary. I hope for 108 more. It's the Jason Rant Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show on AM 770, KTTH, and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Senate Minority Leader Mark Schessler is calling it Florida, not as a Republican who is serving the Senate from Ritzville. He is actually giving up his leadership post, but will continue on as a rank-and-file member of the Republican caucus, and he joins me now. Welcome back to the show, Senator.
Good to be with you again.
So what prompted this decision?
Ronald Reagan had 8 years. I've had 8 years. It's meant missing a lot of things with my grandkids and my children and my wife. And at some point, my farm and my family has a priority in life. And just being there because isn't good enough. And I think there's potentially very capable leaders in the pipeline.
You say potentially. Has anyone stepped up yet as a possible replacement?
There's what's in the caucus stays in the caucus, and I know there are qualified people interested, and I'm confident there will be a strong, capable Republican leader to succeed me.
How does that work behind the scenes if you've got a whole bunch of people who are eyeing the same position? Because to your point, obviously you want to keep all that stuff sort of internal if there's any disagreements.
Well, it's very simple. If you're interested in leadership, you talk to your colleagues, count your votes, and see if it's going to happen or not. I've been part of caucus elections for 28 years. I've seen a little bit of everything in 28 years of caucus elections, House and Senate.
Do you expect any sort of external lobbying?
Most of the people on the outside stay outside. Even our friends like yourself generally respect that it's the decision of the members and just don't get involved.
What about the actual lawmakers themselves? Do you think they will keep everything internal?
There's no guarantee that they will keep everything internal. I tend to respect the privacy and comments of the members and keep them close to me and not publish them.
Yeah. Is it fair to say you don't think someone who is perceived or is too ideological would be a good person for this particular role? You had given an interview, I believe it was to the Tacoma News Tribune, in which you essentially said, look, you're going to have to take some hard votes, which to me indicates sometimes you're going to have to vote in a way that's best for the party and not necessarily in line with your own beliefs.
Well, first of all, the leader of every caucus I've seen is generally pretty safe in their own districts. I don't think you'll see strong challenges to Senator Billig, Representative Jenkins, JT. I had about 65% in my mm-hmm. last election. Because if you have to look over your shoulder, you can't take votes. And at the end of the day, you have to put the needs of the state, needs of the caucus, sometimes ahead of your own. And whether you are in Congress, whether you're in the state legislature, when you become leader, you have to be able to take more challenging votes. You can't hide. And so you expect that you're going to take votes that are a little tougher.
Yeah. Although the one exception maybe is Eric Cantor, who probably regrets at least the way he handled his failed reelection campaign. But, of course, that's more a national issue.
Yeah, he blew it. But, you know.
Generally, though, you are correct.
Yeah, at the end of the day, clearly Frank Chopp cannot be speaker for the longest straight run in history unless he feels comfortable in his own district. If Frank would have been from a volatile suburb, he probably wouldn't have been speaker that long.
Did the results in the last election play any role in your decision?
No. You know, really, over the past year, it's been all of the work and not much of the fun. And I woke up and I realized that my wife was very happy with the decision that I stepped back a little bit. I've got grandkids that I really want to watch them exhibit at fairs, go to junior rodeos, little league games, take them fishing. Mm-hmm. And when you are leader, you say, well, I'd really like to take the grandkids to Williams Lake this weekend, but I got to get over to Bellevue and work on fundraising. I got to be recruiting in Southwest Washington. You just can't give the job the full time and attention it needs if you are going to do a good job. And my children grew up while I was a member of the legislature. There was a lot of upside to it. And, of course, I didn't make every Little League game, didn't make every other event. So with that, I've had 8 great years. I've got great staff, some really capable members, but at some point, you just say, somebody else could do this and do it pretty well. And I'm only going to have those grandkids for a certain number of years. And I don't take, in the past interim, I didn't take vacation. Other people worked at their jobs, vacationed. I was pretty much tied to that smartphone 24/7. And I'd like to turn that smartphone off once in a while and enjoy life, enjoy the family, but I still want to be engaged in a very meaningful role as leader, not as former leader, but as a senator. I want to be really engaged in the process and be in a position to make a difference from time to time.
Senator Mark Schessler joining me on the line, Republican from Ritzville. What do Republicans need to do to ensure at least some COVID-related wins in this next session, given there's little leverage that Republicans have right now?
Sure. Well, I think what we have to do is be effective communicators with the public. Our communications to the public, telling them what's really happening, being honest with them. For example, we won't have 1,100 hairdressers show up in Olympia. We won't have log trucks show up here to lobby the legislature because they're going to be scattered to the seven winds and the buildings are closed. So we have to be more effective communicators with the public and moving public opinion than any time in my career.
Unrelated to COVID, as a rank and file senator, what's the biggest issue you want to tackle in this next session?
Well, I think it's pretty simple. It's the economy, stupid. This governor doesn't really care about businesses, the economy, and we have to remember the people that surround us go to the bowling alley, they go to the gym, they own or work in a restaurant. The governor's people are making really good money. They haven't been furloughed. Their business, they don't own a business. And so it's really easy. You know, when we talk to the people that advertise on your station, the restaurants you frequent, they're struggling. It's the economy, stupid, because the economy pays for government. Government doesn't pay for the economy.
There you go. We've been talking with State Senator Mark Schessler from Ritzville. We look forward to having conversations with you as a senator and not the minority leader, because a lot of added pressure when I talk to members of the leadership. So it'll be a little less so when we chat next time.
Well, I expect to have a good session and continue the things that have been my priorities throughout my entire career, because they really haven't changed.
Well, that's good to hear. Obviously, there's going to need to be a lot of hard work done to fix the situation we've got going on right now in Washington. Mark, thank you so much for stopping by. Best of luck in this next session.
Great to be with you and your listeners.
Thank you. You've been listening to The Jason Rancher. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. Coming up next, Ben Shapiro right here on KTTH.